Good afternoon. Muy buenas tardes. This is Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO, 102.7 FM, www.cooperadio.org, live on the internet. This is the Monday Brown Bagger. I'm Alfred Weber, and today we have a special guest, independent scientist Loren Murray, who's been an expert witness on the Tokyo International Tribunal for War Crimes in Afghanistan, and we have number 7 in our continuing series on HAARP, the space-based weapon of mass destruction. And in this number 7 in the HAARP series, you can, by the way, for those listeners who would like to go and review both the audio archives and the outlines of the programs 1 through 6 in the HAARP series, you can do so by going to peaceinspace.com. That's www.peaceinspace.org. Go to peaceinspace.org, and the 1 through 6 and now 1 through 7 of the HAARP series will be there. And today we'll be covering a very special program. This is a breakthrough program in our HAARP series. It's HAARP and 9/11, how HAARP was used on the September 11, 2001 false flag attacks. Welcome, Loren.
Thank you, Alfred.
Well, this, I know, is going to be a very special and breakthrough program. So why don't we get started? What might be good is to take maybe 5 minutes or so to set the context for the false flag operation of September 11th, 2001.
So what I'll cover just briefly for the listeners who are not familiar with this or might have missed previous interviews, and it's all sort of new material anyway, is I'm going to discuss who benefited, qui bono, from the 9/11 events, and then who did it, and I'm going to mention some international leaders, the comments they've made. Those are very, very interesting, and they're certainly much more sophisticated in the ways of the world, and they have ties to intelligence agencies, so they're really much more authoritative on analyzing or looking at the geopolitical picture and how 9/11 fits into that. This is part of a global event, that's for sure. And then I want to mention the Pentagon, which is the Achilles heel of 9/11, because there's no other entity involved at the Pentagon except the military. And how in the world could a military cruise missile hit the Pentagon, the most guarded building probably in the United States and maybe even in the world, and not be stopped by the military? It was certainly the Pentagon cruise missile is certainly a big giveaway about their involvement. And then most of the interview I would like to talk about how the World Trade Center in particular was attacked, and by looking at the energy budget, for instance, the amount of energy needed to really basically powder those two robust buildings requires a more of a scientific look or approach. And there's plenty of evidence to suggest that HAARP or particular beam weapons were used on those buildings on 9/11. So let's start with who benefited from this. Cui bono? You have to always ask that. It's kind of like the famous question from Watergate, you know, follow the money. So basically, 9/11 was carried out for three reasons. The Department of Defense was able to establish a new branch of the military called the Northern Command, or NORTHCOM. And this violates federal laws, in specifically the Posse Comitatus Act of, I believe it was 1863, which prohibited the U.S. military from enforcing domestic laws. And so we now have Bush bringing back active duty battle troops from Iraq and placing them in the states of the United States. And this happened during our recent election, the 2008 November election. And basically, the National Guard, which was never intended for foreign wars, has really been destroyed since 1991 very, very efficiently and effectively by using them as throwaway soldiers in Iraq particularly. And they're all contaminated with depleted uranium now. So basically, 2 months after they get over there, the contamination is so bad in Iraq particularly that basically their lives are over and their health is destroyed forever. So I think also this is a way to privatize responses to national disasters. And what we see now is Kellogg Brown and Root, Halliburton, Blackwater are privately getting contracts from the government to respond to national disasters that the National Guard would have done instead. Number two, who benefited? Well, the Patriot Act was passed without a single member of Congress reading it. And I talked to three members of Congress who told me that the Patriot Act was all written. There was no consultation with Congress. It was just walked into Congress, all of the doors were locked, and the members of Congress were told they would not leave the building until every member of Congress signed the Patriot Act. And basically, the Patriot Act violates our constitutional rights and establishes the United States as a police state. And number three of who benefited is that the U.S. did not have a military base or position established in Central Asia, which is geopolitically strategic for oil pipelines and access to Central Asian oil deposits. So 9/11 was used as an excuse to for the U.S. to go to war against Afghanistan, invade Afghanistan, and then establish a very, very large military presence. And now that the, I guess you could call it the heavy lifting or the fierce battle has been done in Iraq, Obama, who has not been sworn in as president yet, has already said that he's withdrawing the battle troops from Iraq and increasing the military presence and number of troops in Afghanistan. And that's because we desperately need to control the oil deposits in Central Asia. And the debacle that happened in Georgia over Ossetia has really basically turned all Central Asian governments, and these are the Central Asian oil-rich countries, which were formerly part of the Soviet Union, they have now completely turned against the West, and the U.S. government, they'll never trust us. And they are moving under the umbrella of Putin and Russia. And so Putin is successfully negotiating contracts which threaten any possible access to Central Asian oil through the Ceyhan pipeline, which was built and completed from Central Asia to a warm water port in Turkey at Ceyhan on the Mediterranean. And the very same day that huge international oil companies were celebrating the completion of the oil pipeline, the Ceyhan pipeline, is the very same day that is the Israeli military using 5,000 depleted uranium bunker busters with fourth generation nukes in them to attack Lebanon. So that's the geopolitical picture of who benefited. Now, who did it? This is very interesting, and I would like to state that General Ivashov, who is now one of the four main leaders of Russia, at the time of 9/11, he was the chief of staff of the Russian armed forces. So he had access to high-level military intelligence. He had the highest access to satellite data and information, as well as their own network of information sources in the United States. We could just say on the ground. And then also ex-Italian President Francesco Cossiga has made statements in the newspapers. And even Fidel Castro says the U.S. fooled the world over 9/11. And so this isn't just one, easily dismissed person. These are three very heavyweight international leaders with a lot of credibility stating that international terrorism does not exist. So I'd like to quote General Ivashov. His article is called International Terrorism Does Not Exist, and we have to put this article posted on your website because I think it's the most succinct, insightful, the best geopolitical vision and analysis of 9/11. So he said, as the current international situation shows, terrorism emerges where contradictions aggravate, where there is a change of social relations or a change of regime, where there is political, economic, or social instability, where there is moral decadence, where cynicism and nihilism triumph, where vice is legalized, and where crime spreads. It is globalization that creates the conditions for the emergence of these extremely dangerous phenomena. It is in this context that the new world geostrategic map is being designed, that the resources of the planet are being redistributed, that borders are disappearing, that international law is being torn into pieces, that cultural identities are being erased, that spiritual life becomes impoverished. This is just really a very excellent overview. And then he goes on to say, in this context, if we analyze what happened on September 11, 2001 in the United States, we can arrive at the following conclusions. One, the organizers of those attacks were the political and business circles interested in destabilizing the world order and who had the means necessary to finance the operation. That sounds like bankers to me. The political conception of this action matured there where tensions emerged in the administration of financial and other types of resources. We need to look for the reasons of the attacks in the coincidence of interests of the big capital at global and transnational levels. In other words, the international bankers. In the circles that were not satisfied with the rhythm of the globalization process or its direction, unlike traditional wars, whose conception is determined by generals and politicians. The oligarchs and politicians submitted to the former were the ones who did it this time. Number two, only secret services and their current chiefs, or those retired but still having influence in state, inside the state organizations, for instance, George Herbert Walker Bush, have the ability to plan, organize, and conduct an operation of such magnitude. Generally, secret services create, finance, and control extremist organizations. Without the support of secret services, these organizations cannot exist, let alone carry out operations of such magnitude inside countries so well protected. Planning and carrying out an operation on this scale is extremely complex. And Alfred, I'd like to add, it took at least three decades to plan this and just move the right people into the right key positions. Number three, Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda cannot be the organizers nor the performers of the September 11th attack. They do not have the necessary organization, resources, or leaders. Thus, a team of professionals had to be created, and the Arab kamikazes are just extras to mask the operation. The September 11th operation modified the course of events in the world in the direction chosen by transnational mafias and international oligarchs. That is, those who hope to control the planet's natural resources, the world information network, and the financial flows. This operation also favored the U.S. economic and political elite that also seeks world dominance. But clearly here, Alfred, Ivashov is saying that there's an international criminal cabal or criminal syndicate that is running all of this. And we certainly do know that this is the City of London bankers, the international financiers, who are always at the bottom of all of this. Now, Francesco Cossiga, the former Italian prime minister, said that the attacks were run by the CIA and Mossad, and that this was common knowledge amongst global intelligence agencies. And what we'll do is put this up on your website also. And he was actually one of the people who set up Operation Gladio in Italy after World War II was over. And that was the stay-behind military or army that secretly did the same thing, these false flag operations, funded and organized terrorists and used them. And so he's very familiar with these types of operations. And then Fidel Castro just said, he was talking about the Pentagon, he said studying the impact of planes similar to those that hit the Twin Towers that had accidentally fallen on densely populated cities, one concludes that it was not a plane that crashed into the Pentagon. Only a projectile could have caused a geometrically round hole that allegedly was made by the plane. And he said, we were fooled like the rest of the planet's inhabitants. So I think that's pretty clear that international military intelligence leaders and political leaders all conclude that this was a CIA, Mossad, and City of London, which would be represented by M16, intelligence operation. And it was M16 that started both the Mossad and the CIA. So, do you have any comments?
Well, I think that you set up the context very well. From an operations point of view, there what General Ivashov points to also is that behind the operations agencies such as MI6, CIA, Mossad, there is what we could call a board of directors, or I use the term International War Crimes Racketeering Organization, which is a permanent interlocking set of board of directors that moves forward on these gigantic world psyops, such as 9/11 and such as the global financial and economic collapse that we're seeing now. But that's just to set the context. What I'd like to say is that we've set the context now. We now have about a little more than 35 minutes left in the show, so I think we should shift over to the issue of how HAARP itself was involved in 9/11, because I think that is the new information, and also it's the information that very powerful forces have been desperately trying to keep from public view.
That's for sure. So I'm a geoscientist, and so I'm approaching the World Trade Center event from an interdisciplinary scientific background. And so there are telltale signs and clues throughout the World Trade Center event and afterwards, in the months afterwards, that tell a very different story from what the official story is, as well as photographs, aerial photos, samples taken on the ground and in the atmosphere, and even satellite photos that tell, that present very different evidence from what was presented by the media to the public. And also that the gatekeepers in the 9/11 movement have done a very good job of preventing from becoming part of the compiled pile of evidence on 9/11, especially at the WTC. So as a geoscientist approaching the World Trade Center collapses and the aftermath, the first thing that I looked at, or my approach, would be the energy budget. And also the aspect of molecular dissociation, which is just the reduction of those two very robust buildings into extremely small particles, 1 micron, 1/10 of a micron, nanoparticle size, and what the energy would be required to do that. So this is actually fun for me. It's actually very, very interesting, and I'm glad that I can present this to the audience and help them understand it. Now, to begin with, when two huge, robust buildings over 100 stories high collapse, there would be an impact or a record in the seismic record of that huge amount of building material, and the kinetic energy involved would leave some kind of evidence on a seismic record. And basically, the seismic record actually only showed something like a quarry blast, a trace or a disturbance of equivalent to a quarry blast, and that's just a few sticks of dynamite or not, certainly not enough to take those buildings down. And what, for people who don't know what kinetic energy is, kinetic energy is all of the energy that it took to build those buildings, to move that building material up higher and higher, and to complete those buildings, all the manpower and the energy, the electricity, the whatever, the diesel fuel or whatever, to operate cranes and to build those buildings, that would all be released in the collapse of the buildings. And If it was a controlled demolition, the height of the detritus pile left after the building's collapse would be one-third the height of the building. So for a 100 or a 115-story building, there should have been 30 or 35 floors of detritus piled up, and it certainly would have affected the buildings, surrounding buildings that were very, very close by. And what you see when you actually very carefully watch videos and documentation of the buildings going down is that the buildings basically erupt into an emulsion. It's like a bubbling water fountain of fine dust, and it's not consistent with any other controlled demolitions that have been done. The rubble never hit the ground. You can't even see rubble falling from the building. You just see dust foaming up or boiling up into the atmosphere and drifting away. That is not a controlled demolition. Also, when you listen to firefighters talking about it, the rubble that's left, or you see aerial photos of the footprints of the buildings, either the footprints are completely bare, as they were for the two World Trade Center buildings, or there's maybe some very straight-walled building material left on the edges, but inside those walls, there's nothing. It's just bare dirt with these 24-foot, perfectly round, geometrically round holes burned into the footprints. And this is very strange. It actually reminded me of a demonstration that I saw in Livermore, where I was a staff scientist at the Livermore Nuclear Weapons Lab. And their project, they've had a project ongoing called Shiva. It's a huge laser facility. And, you know, they've had microwave ovens and beam weapons since 1955, so this is nothing new. They've had a very long time to develop these under the cover of the Cold War with a lot of black budgets to help. And one night in Livermore in about 1991, I had a grad student renting a room for the summer, and he came in and woke me up, and he said, "Come outside. I want you to see an experiment we're doing tonight." It's from the laser facility, and there was an amber-colored beam pointing straight up into the sky. It had a 15-foot diameter. And I said, "Well, what are they doing?" He said, "Oh, they're creating a star." And I knew that was baloney. That was a cover story, because lasers don't make things. They cause molecular dissociation because they release huge amounts of energy. So I suspected it was research for some kind of a beam weapon. Now, what else is very odd is that what happened to the kinetic energy if those buildings came down? It's not there. It's not in the seismic evidence. And what you see when you look at a lot of the documentation and video clips is that these huge piles of dust just boiled off the top of the buildings into the atmosphere. Some of it came down like a dust cloud, but it would hit the ground and move out a certain distance. And then, this is huge amounts of dust all around the buildings. And then that is dust that was affected by gravitational forces bringing it down to the ground. But you would watch the dust just start boiling up into the atmosphere and drifting away. Well, that defies gravity. How could it possibly respond to gravitational forces and end up on the ground and then turn around and defy gravity and disappear off into the atmosphere? What I think that indicates is that a beam weapon was continuing the molecular dissociation after some of the larger particles ended up on the ground or in a dust cloud on the ground and just vaporized them, just turned them into smaller and smaller particles until air movement and Brownian motion just carried them away like smoke rings in a room. Another very, very puzzling thing is that when these buildings were coming down, glass was coming out of the windows and paper was pouring out of the windows, but there were no fires in the building. William Rodriguez, who was the head janitor there, has said very clearly there were no fires in the building. And he was going in and out of the buildings the whole time. Now, how could the paper be pouring out of the windows and it's not burned if there were fires in the buildings? And how could this dust fall under gravitational forces to the ground and then turn around and head up into the sky and disappear? With the paper lying all around, it's still not burned. So it's a very, very fragile substance, whereas the building material is very hard, very substantial, very robust. So there has to be a huge amount of energy being pumped into that building material in order to reduce it to nanoparticles, which are not subjected to gravitational forces. Another very, very strange aspect is these cars that were parked some blocks from the World Trade Center buildings, that some of them, in one news video, these reporters were walking down an alley, and you could just see a whole group of cars that were parked on the street. Suddenly, the whole pile of cars just suddenly spontaneously combusted. It wasn't just one car catching on fire and the fire continuing to spread. It was all of them combusted at the same time. Now, that's evidence also of some new strange phenomenon that takes a lot of energy pumped into a large area to spontaneously combust 25 or 30 cars. There were also a lot of photographs of very bright red rust, which appeared immediately on cars and trucks and even on the beams of the buildings in FEMA photos. And that's just very, very strange. First of all, iron rusts, but steel does not rust. And the steel that was used in the beams in those buildings was selected. They always use steel because it does not rust. So how could all of this rust appear? And it's a very definite chemical process requiring a certain temperature and oxygen and so forth to cause rusting and time. Now, satellite images also has showed dust going into the upper atmosphere. I just wanted to add this. I forgot to add this as nanoparticles. So do you have any comments, Alfred?
Well, I think that what you're doing now is that you're beginning to show that you're beginning to show those aspects of the evidence which demonstrate that what occurred at the World Trade Center site on September 11th was most probably the result of a direct energy weapon like HAARP.
We're
beginning to build an evidentiary case, and I know that there's a lot more evidence to cover. We have about 20 more minutes left in the program, so let's continue building the case, because it's an overwhelming case, in my opinion.
Well, I agree, and you know, once I start beginning to do research, I discover more and more evidence, and then people also contribute information, and I sort of feel like I'm part of a big team. So I hope listeners will send us more information if they have ideas that would help us solve this puzzle. But Dr. Thomas Cahill was asked privately by a member of the Department of Energy. This is where the Department of Energy becomes a suspicious actor in this false flag operation. And he was asked on about October the 5th to do air sampling and monitoring, which he did for about 4 months at the World Trade Center. So he set up very, very sophisticated atmospheric testing and air sampling equipment on the roof of the building about a mile downwind from the World Trade Centers. And he took samples, and of course, all this information personally belongs to him. He received no funding from the Department of Energy or any other government agency to do this. And that is also suspicious because it gives him control over all of the information. And if the Department of Energy had paid for the project, they would be subjected to Freedom of Information Act requests, lawsuits, and so forth. So they just got the best pollution expert in the world, who co-founded the Delta Group, an international consortium of pollution scientists, and he did all their work for them. So what he found in his time monitoring the World Trade Center was, number one, fine and very fine, that means nanoparticles, transition metals, which interfere with lung chemistry. Two, acids, in this case sulfuric acid, which attacks cilia and lung cells directly. Three, very fine, undissolved, insoluble particles, in this case glass, which travel through the lungs to the bloodstream and heart. And four, high temperature organic matter, many components of which are known to be carcinogens. But I actually saw his report. It's about 2 or 3 inches thick. A journalist showed it to me. And there were high levels of uranium. There were traces of deuterium, which is used in nuclear weapons. And there was a lot of tritium, which is also used in nuclear weapons, but it's also used in exit signs that have no electrical source. They make the sign glow because they're so radioactive. And so he reported that it was the highest concentration of metals ever measured in air samples in the United States, and the highest concentration of extremely fine particles that had ever been measured in air samples in the United States. Now, that would not happen in a controlled demolition, and it would not happen with a chemical explosive like thermite. This took very, very sophisticated scientific technologies that the public may not be aware that they even exist. But this was if it was a HAARP event. If it was directed energy weapons, it involved the Department of Energy. I worked at Livermore, and that's actually where HAARP was secretly developed during the Cold War, secretly with Russia, with the Soviet Union. So HAARP and is a joint project between two governments that in the Cold War were bitterly opposed to each other, and yet secretly they were developing new weapons of mass destruction together, and this would be for the international financiers. This would be for the City of London bankers and the Wall Street bankers. But the Wall Street bankers always serve the City of London bankers. Now, another very strange aspect is that there were FEMA aerial photos of 130 dump trucks coming in right immediately after the World Trade Center event. The buildings came down, and from the ground you couldn't tell that the dump trucks were full of soil or dirt, but from these FEMA aerial photos, they were full of dirt, and they had canvases concealing that dirt from anyone who might have seen them from the ground. And for months, even into March, this is 6 or 8 months after the World Trade Center event, the ground and areas were still fuming with these fumes coming out of the ground and off the surface of the ground. And they were bringing all these dump trucks of soil in, and the piles got higher and higher over time around the footprints of the World Trade Center buildings. And then they would truck them out. They'd leave it there for a month, for a week, and then they would dig it all up and truck it out and bring new trucks full of soil in. So if this was a contamination that they were trying to remediate, or if it was in response to whatever the exotic technology and HAARP that was used, I really don't know, but I'm sure that we will discover more. Now, there was also a news interview right after this happened on the same day with Dr. Tony Daher and Lincoln Cleaver, who were two doctors working in the emergency room of a hospital where many of the casualties were brought. But what they said was that there were almost no more casualties after noon on that day, and they were just sort of puzzled. And the newscaster asked them, the anchor, said, well, where are all the bodies? And they really had no answers. The firemen said they saw no bodies. They saw the antenna that was on the top of Building 1 down at ground level, but they said, the firemen said there were no bodies. So if a beam weapon was used, this would explain why there were no bodies.
And I think that you mentioned that there were reports that the hospitals reported no that they received no bodies after a certain time.
That's right. After noon, after it was just totally puzzling. After noon that day, there were no more.
Now, isn't that anomalous that after this mega catastrophe, in which we know that at least 3,000 persons were lost, the hospitals received no persons after 12 o'clock.
Very strange. And so we can say, where are all the bodies and where's all the kinetic energy? Those are not small clues. Those are very critical aspects that were never addressed, that were covered up, that were ignored in all of the investigations. With a nation of scientists they could have called on to come in and help to analyze what happened at the World Trade Center. Instead, they've used dishonest scientists to really cover up what happened. Another thing that happened that was very puzzling is that the firemen and the emergency responders working around the World Trade Center, and there were no fires, remember, on the ground, they complained that their boots disintegrated after 2 hours. Well, they didn't burn up because there were no fires. What happened to their boots? This is further evidence of molecular dissociation. Whatever the technology was used on the buildings was also affecting their boots. Now, another thing that happened is there were days when it rained at the World Trade Center site where the emergency responders were working. And in all the photos, even though the buildings continued, they said they call it burning for 99 days, there was no fuming on days when it was raining. If that was actual burning, there would have been more smoke because the water would have affected the burning, the fires, and certainly some rain would not have put out fires that were burning for over 3 months. Now, there were also samples taken. The USGS took samples, particle samples, dust samples, at the World Trade Center. And this is what their official statement was about ferric and ferrous dust. Ferric and ferrous refers to the chemical formula for the iron and oxygen or hydroxide or whatever is attached to it. So this is what the USGS said. The ferric absorptions are interpreted to be due to hematite, iron rust, which is two iron atoms and three oxygen, Fe2O3, or goethite, which is an iron oxide hydroxide, FeOOH. The red coatings on iron beams, now listen to that, the USGS referred to those steel beams as iron beams. They knew darn well they were steel. The red coatings on iron beams seen in news reports and by the field team are consistent with hematite or goethite. Well, steel doesn't rust. Iron rapidly rusts. Steel does not. And the reason they use steel in buildings and building structures is because it's much stronger than iron. So, so where did that rust come from? How did that happen? It's never explained. The samples taken by the USGS at the World Trade Center, they collected a few dust samples, but they never collected any at all around those I guess we could call toasted cars. The engine blocks were missing. There were 1,400 cars involved. This is several blocks away from the World Trade Center building. The door handles were missing off of those cars, and when you looked sideways through the front of the car, you could see the engine block was completely missing. I believe that engine blocks are made out of iron. What happened to the engine? What happened to the door handles? It was the most bizarre thing I've ever seen, and it had to be a large phenomenon to affect 1,400 cars. There was paper on the ground all around them. It was not a fire. There were also spectral absorption images taken at the World Trade Center that indicated the particles, the average size of the particles were 1 micron. That is very, very, very tiny. The diameter of a human hair is about 80 microns. 1 micron is 1/80th the diameter of a human hair. Those are very tiny particles, and that is not caused by a controlled demolition or thermite, a chemical explosive. it requires much, much greater energy to reduce large chunks of material into very tiny dust particles like that. Another evidence that beam weapons were used is on the top of the buildings. If you look at the photos of the buildings starting to come down, there's evidence that beam weapons were used, as well as official photos. Some of them had color alterations, and they had been doctored up. Why would they change the color or enhance certain colors, or why would they touch the color at all if they weren't trying to alter the perception of people investigating? Now, when the Seattle Dome was taken down with a controlled demolition, the dust cloud that was created after the building came down was never higher than the height of the building. So how in the world could these World Trade Center buildings just go up in smoke like that? And you can even see in photos from the space station, you can see the dust flowing up in streams into the upper atmosphere. In the Seattle Dome controlled demolition, those dust particles never got higher than the building because they were large enough to be subjected to gravitational forces, and so they just came right down onto the ground. Someone has to explain how two huge, robust buildings that had very, very heavy steel infrastructure and gridding and beams could just disappear into thin air. That is certainly very incriminating. Another thing that happened is that...
I just want to jump in here, Loren.
Yes.
Give you what's called the five-minute warning.
Yes.
We have about 5 minutes, and I wondered if in these 5 minutes you could sum up why you think that it was HAARP, the space-based weapon of mass destruction, that was used here, and maybe why there may have been some other instances. We know that HAARP has been used in earthquakes, tectonic warfare, and cyclones and hurricanes like Katrina. Has it been used to take down buildings, perhaps the Alfred P. Murrow Building in Oklahoma City? What are other instances where HAARP may have been used in a false flag operation?
Well, we also, and you were there at this conference with me in Wisconsin. We arrived in Wisconsin just a day or two after the Minneapolis bridge collapse. And some of the speakers went up to investigate the Minneapolis bridge collapse during the conference, and they reported that there were similarities between that bridge collapse and events at the World Trade Center, or I should say evidence left at the World Trade Center. For instance, one of the engineers reported that looking at the Minneapolis bridge collapse, it was a collapse that had never been reported or seen before. And this engineer said that every bridge segment failed at exactly the same moment. Well, that's kind of what we saw at the World Trade Center building, where the whole structure and the volume of material just went up in smoke, just disappeared very, very quickly. I think it was 8 seconds or 10 seconds for both of those buildings to be gone. And I don't think you could do that in a controlled demolition. It was amazing.
Yeah, what was notable, I thought, about that bridge collapse, we took the flight from Vancouver and to Minneapolis, and the pilot flew over it. It had happened just the day before. This was August of 2007, is that we speculated that since the conference was on the theory, partially, that directed energy weapons had taken down the World Trade Center, was that this was perhaps a demonstration of that principle. Secondly, it then turned out that this bridge was in the way of the proposed North American Union Highway, which many of the Minneapolis residents were demonstrating against and did not want to give up their
right.
property. So this was right. a way to get eminent domain.
Right. Domain. That's great. And so what I would say, the most outstanding clue or the one thing that really needs to be answered at the World Trade Center is, in a controlled demolition, a huge amount of kinetic energy would have been released by those two buildings falling, and there's no evidence of it at all. Instead, what happened is that from what we observed, those huge volumes of dust just disappearing into the atmosphere, that even greater amounts of energy were required than the kinetic energy that would have been released to vaporize those buildings and just sort of boil them off in dust. So I'd like to just read a comment that was made on a blog or a forum on the internet, which really sums it up very nicely. And the person is anonymous. We stand at the beginning of a new age. Our government has its hands on a method of disrupting the molecular basis for matter, and its first impulse was to weaponize it. Is this hard to understand? Like splitting atoms to create destruction was hard to understand in 1945. And so now, Alfred, instead of the Manhattan Project, we have the HAARP project, which is a new and improved model, which makes it possible to carry out electromagnetic warfare, geomagnetic warfare. Of course, this new invention came when the United States ruled supreme. A weapon system of vast new power comes in time, and we don't have an enemy worthy of it. So, naturally, we use it on ourselves. Wag the dog. But there is something even more sinister about this. And that is that the international financiers have always used are required over the last 100 years, weapons of mass destruction in order to carry out their increasing control of credit and banking. And that is why the Manhattan Project, the weaponization of nuclear energy, which happened in World War II, that's why it was named the Manhattan Project. It was for the Wall Street bankers. But the real bankers, the real financiers who these weapons are used by are the City of London bankers. And that's how they have maintained their control. And it's how they have increased wealth upward, concentrated wealth upward. And they're really just stealing everything that they can, using these weapons from indigenous people, mineral deposits, people's homes. They're affecting us, all of these things, in every way. And they've really turned this planet into a Death Star. It's a very, very, very sad commentary on humanity and humankind.
Well, that's certainly a profound comment. Now, so that we know now what has occurred in the false flag operation of September 11th, and that's that it was carried out essentially through the space-based weapon of mass destruction, HAARP. We only have a couple of minutes left in the program. I want to remind listeners that they can go to our website at www.peaceinspace.org and listen to the six, now seven-part series on HAARP, listen to the scientific basis and understand why it was and why it is that HAARP was used at the World Trade Center. Just in these last couple of minutes, could you summarize why it is that it's taken now almost 8 to 9 years for the information to come out that HAARP was used at 9/11? And take about 60 seconds.
Well, I'd like to read a quote by Richard Cook. It's from a paper he wrote, Extraordinary Times, Intentional Collapse and Takedown of the USA. And it's really the qui bono, the people who benefit, who have a vested interest in preventing the truth from coming out. He said, as the 20th century advanced, the financier elite became heavily involved in getting rich off World War and the manufacture of the new weapons of mass destruction that modern technology made possible. Warfare and weaponry combined with control of credit manufactured through the leveraging of industrial production were to be the primary means of putting nations and their populations into debt. That's exactly what's happening to us now, and they've used HAARP to carry out 9/11.
Exactly. Well, once again, we've been with independent scientist Lorraine Murray in part seven of our continuing series on HAARP, the space-based weapon of mass destruction. This program on the role of HAARP in the false flag operation of September 11, 2001. You can go to www.peaceinspace.org to listen to this program and to listen to the audio archives and outlines of all the programs. There will be there as well a complete outline with references of all the references listed throughout this program. This is Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, www.cooperadio.org. This is the Monday Brambagger. I'm Alfred Weber. May you have a wonderful and miracle-filled day. Thank you.